Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games. I make tabletop role-playing games, and I have been since the year 1066, surprisingly. And I'm here with my co-host from the future, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig Campbell. I'm the owner of Nerdburger Games. And in the future, Nerdburger Games won the Game Wars and is now like Taco Bell in Demolition Man, where every restaurant is Taco Bell, but now every game is a Nerdburger game. So we are here with Sebastian. Sebastian, when are you from?
Yeah, hi, I'm Sebastian. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm a full-time writer, editor, and game designer. Or am I? You don't know if I'm a doppelganger from another timeline, and you have no way to tell.
Well, except for your unique time signature.
Yes.
7/8 time. It's very jazzy. If you can't tell, today we're talking with Sebastian. Today we're talking with him about time travel, and this is going to be such a fun, exciting conversation because I adore time
travel. I'm obsessed with time travel. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm so excited to get into it. You know what? We all know what time travel is. So why don't we just throw it over to Sebastian?
It's just common knowledge. Yeah, everybody knows.
It is. It totally is. I think everyone, if you live in this day and age, you have consumed some sort of media about time travel. Whether or not you've implemented it into your game is another thing. But Sebastian, tell us about why you chose this topic.
Yeah, so honestly, I'm really interested in time travel for its narrative possibilities. There are all sorts of different stories that you can tell with time travel. And I find it particularly interesting for, like, you know, I made a joke about doppelgangers and alternate timelines. And that's one of the themes that I really enjoy exploring. And I think that in particularly for RPGs, it's a topic that a lot of people that play games are familiar with and that they want to implement. And actually, mechanically, when you get to doing it, it can be quite complicated. And there are a lot of problems that people run into when they're thinking about introducing it into their games. And I thought that we could talk a bit about, like, you know, what are these problems? What kinds of stories can you tell? What would you like to do? And, like, what are the options? And, like, what are some kind of games that we might be able to look to for reference of examples of it being implemented really well? So those are kind of the ideas that I had to bring. I'm designing a time travel arc for my home game. It's like there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened with this home game, but basically I'm not going to be GMing it anymore, and so I'm writing this for someone to take over. And so that experience has been really fun for me, and I can talk a bit about that too.
Yeah, I mean, I have also GM'd games where I have never designed a game with time travel at its core, but I have GM'd games, at least adventures within the game, within the campaign that involves time travel, and it is really, really fun and rewarding to do, especially when it is done right. But I will say it is incredibly difficult, and it takes a little bit more planning than a regular timeline game.
I've designed one game. It's a two-person game called What Once Went Wrong, and it's ostensibly about time travel, but really not. Like, the time travel aspect of it is the backdrop, the setting, because it's based off of Quantum Leap, where you're jumping through time and helping people. So you're not necessarily, like, trying to change the past in a dramatic way, but you're helping and changing some things in some individuals, you know, lives, in their small lives, which, you know, and it's always fun to, when if you ever watch the show, the original or the reboot, which just got canceled. And I'm very, very angry.
I'm sorry.
they all, you know, it always kind of ends with Al telling Sam, or, you know, whoever telling Ben, what happens to the person. So there's this satisfaction of, like, you change something. This was going to happen, but now this is what is going to happen. And that's the real crux of time travel, is that there's the idea. There's a lot of different ways you can implement it, as Sebastian said, and the far end of the spectrum, one end of the spectrum, is you can go back in time and you can change the past, and there's one timeline and it can potentially butterfly effect everything all the way up through. And so that's a lot of work for a GM to like reinvent the world anytime somebody goes back and changes a significant event. Even if you use the kind of multiverse offshoot timeline version, you're still now the characters are going down this timeline where this thing happened and it's reinventing the world, even though they could skip sideways into their old world. That's the killer. That's the thing that I am frankly terrified of as a GM to try to run a time travel story where you can go back and change everything. Now you could keep the setting tighter. Like, we're not going to talk about national politics and all this sort of thing, but they're like, you're going to change things in the neighborhood, you know, where you go back and you prevent, somebody's murder, or you prevent a store from being, looted and burned down or something. And that changes the fabric of the neighborhood. So it's not as daunting as like, say, oh, you know, strangling baby Hitler. But yeah, I'm thrilled that you brought it up, but it's just like, it's one of those ones that it's like, it's a white whale. Or I think for me and probably for a lot of people, it's like very daunting.
Sebastian, you hinted at some of those other pitfalls that we can get into. And Craig has talked about one of those major ones. What are some of the other ones that you've run into, you've thought about as you've been considering time travel?
Yeah, so honestly, a big part of it is narrative cohesion and continuity. There's a lot to keep track of, especially like, because for time travel, in my opinion, you really need to know like what direction your causality is going. And by that, I mean, like, you know, which things are big enough to affect events in which direction, like past or future. And you need to like, it can become very stressful when you try to keep track of every single thing. But I found that actually you don't necessarily have to keep track of every specific thing, and you could just focus on the stuff that is like of narrative interest to the players. And I don't know. At first I started out trying to do this, and I was like, okay, how do I reconcile every single tiny little change that could possibly happen? And then I was like, I'm going to be here all day and I'll never actually getting to write the actual story that the players are going to play. So there has to be like an element of letting go of that and just dealing with like the big interesting stuff. And in terms of narrative cohesion and continuity, I think you want to have like kind of baseline fictional rules for time, because a lot of the existing settings that have it like will have their own, okay, so time works in this way, time works in that way, and they'll have rules about it. So like one of the examples that I like to look to is actually the official Star Trek Adventures RPG by Modiphius, because that is a setting that has time travel, and there are laws in that setting that govern time travel. Like it's a part of that universe, like they have temporal accords, which like, you know, will tell you like what you are or not allowed to do in terms of time travel. There's also like a temporal prime directive, which means that you can't like contaminate a timeline or a cause by sharing information that like people from the past shouldn't have. And like, so there are ways in those kinds of universes to stop breaking the timeline, essentially. And so doing that kind of research and finding out how other properties like that you mentioned that a lot of gamers might be familiar with, handle that. Like, that's a really good way to start. And, like, acknowledging it as a possibility in-universe can go a long way as well.
I definitely like looking at other media properties, too. Not even just role-playing games, but some of my favorite, like, I love the X-Men. And there is a whole time travel arc in the X-Men. And I like the way that they handle that. And I think it's very...
Yeah,
you know, it's not necessarily scientific, but time travel is not real, so you can
do definitely. And like, you know, the Doctor Who has an RPG, like Cubicle 7 has that, and like there are rules for it. Like that universe also has time travel. Like I'm less familiar with that one, but like I know it exists in the game. Like I think it comes with several warnings about like, hey, Time Lords, crazy powerful. Maybe don't have everyone in the party be a Time Lord. That kind of thing.
Because it is extreme. It has the capability of being game breaking if people don't play within the universe without trying to break the toys. If people are trying to break the toys, you're not going to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, hopefully, again, as we say a lot on this podcast, hopefully everyone is coming in to the game with the expectation of we're having a collective fun together and we don't want to ruin anything for anybody else. And I think that that like Time Lord is like being the Jedi in a Star Wars game. Like you might want to put some limits on who can be it and what they can do. I think also there are a couple other games. So there's not like a lot of games that I know of, at least, where time travel is a central thing that happens in it. And I think this
because
it's so hard. I mean, what are some ones that you know that are like, it's the thing. This is the thing that we do.
Right. Yeah. So like I said, like the Star Trek RPG, there's a specific supplement that's kind of dedicated to it. And like it's called the Sciences Division. And it kind of, it does come with advice on like how to run a time travel arc. And one of the advice is like to kind of frame time travel as, you know, maybe unreliable and inconvenient, and it should present you with like various problems that if you say, I don't know, like say your crew like finds a technology from the future that they want to keep, and like those kinds of problems can also be introduced, and it doesn't happen. And so like, yes, time travel is like the reason why you have this problem, but the problem itself could be like the more interesting element, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I also know that like there are a few solo journaling games that have done it really well. There's one called Project Echo, and there's also one called Today's Passing, and the idea of those is that like, you know, you're this character, and it's kind of your job to like travel through time or like relive a time loop. And like honestly, the solo format actually solves a lot of the problems that you would have with time travel, because you're one person, you have agency over like one particular thing. And like that's, I don't know, I think that like that, like playing games like that might also prepare you to run a larger game as a DM for other people. So I think like, you know, there are, like, it's a really interesting, there are just so many ways to do it. And like, definitely I'd say that like those games would be my kind of reference. Yeah.
There's another one that I know, it's called Thursday. It's by Eli Seitz. And it is a time loop game, but it's not like you can go back however far you want. It's you're time looping through the same Thursday over and over again. And that can be like, it's based off of the series Russian Doll, which is the same kind of idea. And I love time loops like that. Like Happy Death Day, great. 100%. That's how I've done time travel in my games before, where there was some sort of artifact on board that was related to time, and it gets smashed up by a sea monster on this cruise across the ocean. And every time this big monster comes and eats the time artifact, they restart at one of the days. So how I started it was they play through the first day without knowing there's even going to be a time loop. I have some certain things that happen, like this guy goes here, this person drops something, this person gets in a fight, blah, blah, blah. Like, I had a couple, like, events, and then they get to the time loop, and they all wake up on the day again. They see some of these things start to happen again, and it kind of signals that they're in the time loop, just like how you would do in a movie. And it didn't, like, great, you fixed the timeline here. You don't have to worry about the ripple going so far ahead in the future. It's just like the one day or the three days. I was inspired by Majora's Mask for that. One of my absolute favorite games, which is a Legend of Zelda game about a time loop. And just little things like that can help. I'm not equipped to do like a time travel. I would love to read the like the Star Trek supplement, for example, have someone who is smarter than me explain how I should do it, so I don't have to do all the things.
Yeah, definitely. And like another thing that I would say is that time travel doesn't necessarily have to be like this big epic thing. Like we can kind of take a step back and like go to very basic mechanics, like, you know, like the flashback mechanic in Blades in the Dark. Like that technically is a form of time travel, wherein you give the players the opportunity to say like, well, in the past I actually did this, and in doing so, like, allow them to change how the situation is presented in the present for the fiction. And so, like, those kinds of things, like, those are also mechanics that are available to you, even if you want to tell, like, a really big, sweeping, like, I'm going to change the outcome of this whole entire timeline story. Like, you can still do that. I think, like, because I do think time travel is, you know, like, for a lot of people, like, it's a big, kind of sweeping, dramatic thing that could, I don't know, change the fate of everyone that lives on this planet. But also, like, kind of starting out with, actually, like, in a flashback, I did this a couple of hours ago, we can kind of go back to that base and then move on from there and use a similar kind of narrative structure for it. It doesn't, you know, if you're not really sure where to start, that would also be a piece of advice I have.
That makes me think of Time Watch by Pelgrane Press, which is entirely about, you know, the time cops, right? The time police who are in charge of making sure everything stays the way it's, you know, there's a correct timeline and everything needs to stay that way. And other people travel through time and do bad things, and you have to go back and fix it. And they, in the game, it's built in that they have like that flashback thing, but it's my GM referred to it as the Bill and Ted effect, which is you can have something go your way right now, as long as in the future you travel back in time and make that thing happen. So we were playing a game where we was like, we really need to be able to blow something up, but we have no means of blowing anything up. We said, well, after we've blown this up, we'll get some dynamite and we'll travel back in time to before we're here now, and we'll hide the dynamite right over here. And there it was, which, and you have to make a roll, and there's a possibility of things going awry, and there's limitations on how you can utilize it. Otherwise it's just, you know, a catch-all that allows you to just solve every problem. But it was a lot of fun, because you had to come up with like creative ways, like how can we do this, and you have to remember to do it after the fact. And but it also raises some of what you see in time travel stories, which is like the idea of free will versus predestination. Because if that dynamite is there, it means we successfully blow this thing up, and we are fated to win. Now some people don't have an issue with that, because the journey can be the enjoyment that you get out of the story. Like, okay, we know this is, we do this with movies all the time. We know that like at the end of a movie, James Bond's going to win. Like James Bond's going to, you know, pick a movie. Like, well, not always. There's lots of winning.
Yeah.
But the point is that like with many, many movies, you know, probably this protagonist is going to make it to the end. This thing is going to go well. It's a question of how they do it. You know, nobody expected Neo to die at the end of Matrix. Well, let's not talk about like the first.
He does die though.
Right, but he doesn't really, because the story allows you to do. But the point is that we expected the character to make it to the end of the story and to win, so to speak. Anyway, it was just a question of how, and the how was fun. And I also found myself thinking too about when you brought the time travel thing up, because I fall back to different types of media too, and it's often the TV shows and movies. And a TV show that I really enjoyed, which only made it for a couple of seasons, is Timeless. And another thing to throw in there, something that you can have fun with as a GM or incorporate into designing, since we're kind of talking about all of it at the same time. With this one, if you can go back and change things, who remembers what was before and what is the new truth? Because in Timeless, what happened was we had characters that got in their little time travel machine and they went back and they fixed something, or they stopped the baddie from doing the thing. And then they came up, and every so often the baddie would get away with something else. Like there would be a change to the history, and they would come back to the present of the story, and the support team that was in the present didn't know that anything got changed. Like their brain was changed to understand this is the history now. Whereas the people who went and did the time traveling, they know it was like this and now it's like this.
Yeah.
And that could make for an interesting situation if you have a group of characters where some time travel and some don't on occasion. And you have characters who know, oh, this is how it's always been. And then you have other characters who know, no, there was better. Like there's a better situation. It was better here.
Yeah.
And now it's worse because of something that happened in the past while we were back there and we saw it happen, or we accidentally caused it, or who knows.
Yeah. With the case of like the kind of predestined role situation that you mentioned, I like to have it so that the characters get to fill like a predestined role, but what they do in that, they still have agency to change the situation. So I see it more as like the predestined element is that this is the job you need to do, but how you do it is still up to you. And so like that, like to preserve the player agency, because like, yeah, you're right. It can be very difficult to, to still give the players like that sense of control over the story. But I found that doing it like that works really well.
I think too, like exploring that idea that, oh, yeah, we aren't necessarily in control can be,
yeah,
bad.
Like, so like, you know, maybe, yeah, like maybe you're not necessarily fated to win. You're fated to like be put in this situation, but like, I don't know, it could still go wrong. Like,
right. It's a question of, yeah, what is quote unquote fated to happen.
Like, yeah. Like what is parts. It?
Like,
yeah.
We're fated to end up in a place where one of us is going to be able to go back and put the dynamite there. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean we necessarily won.
Yeah. Like, you can put the dynamite there, but like, I mean, you've got to make sure that it goes off at the right time. You've got to make sure it's not discovered by the wrong person. You know, you have to make sure that, like, I don't know, it's not raining that day and, you know, it's in a dry place and it's not going to not go off, like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't even you guys. Maybe it was a bad guy who has killed you at the end and Hal has taken your time travel equipment and will do it anyway to trick you mm-hmm. and to lure you into a trap.
Or,
there's all sorts
or
of
captured you yeah. and tortured you to learn what.
Right.
Yeah, like how to do.
And then they went and did that in order to fulfill the timeline so that we didn't create a gigantic paradox, which is a whole other kettle of fish when it comes
yeah,
to.
Yeah, no, paradox. Yeah, paradoxes are super fun. Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the ways that people. Oh, sorry, Sebastian.
Oh, no, go ahead. I mean, I was going to say, like, paradoxes are really interesting because straight up, I'm not a physicist. And so, like, from a scientific perspective, I just kind of made up a whole bunch of stuff. But that's something that I did deal with, and like it came into play when I was writing this this arc when a character was going to encounter their doppelganger, and that created a paradox because the two wanted very different things and were on opposing sides of like a war. And so I was like, I mean, yeah, like the easy way to resolve that would be for one to kill the other, because then there wouldn't be a paradox and it wouldn't be essentially like the same person wants different things. But I was like, also I wanted to give them the option to resolve this peacefully, and they could do that by befriending the doppelganger and making it so that there was no longer a like opposition between them, and like that was a way to resolve it. I like to think of a paradox as like two concurrent things being true when really they shouldn't be, and that's kind of like my base definition of a paradox in terms of like RPGs, like what you can do with it.
Yeah, there's an excellent example of that in the Dark Tower series mm-hmm. with Roland and his memory of something that does or doesn't happen to another character. And he has, like, it actually plagues him. Like, it tears his mind up at one point where he has two distinct memories that are in direct opposition to each other. And it's a plot yeah. point that he's dealing with that.
I think one of the ways that people try to avoid paradoxes in their time travel stories, not just in their games, but in their movies and books, is to have the multiverse. Like, oh, you're jumping between, you're not jumping through time, you're jumping into a different universe at this point. I find that so inherently sad, because in this other universe, you failed. And they are people suffering. There are yous over there suffering in that other universe. Are you satisfied with the people that you left behind suffering from your bad universe and you get to go to the good one? I think that is such a sad, like that's horror. That's a horror story for me. And I think that could be something like your time travel game doesn't even have to be your time traveling. It could be the aftermath of everyone having time traveled. And how are you dealing with all of this at the end? Okay, you've aligned the timeline. Now what? Like, what does that mean for your characters? You don't even necessarily have to deal with making sure that things are aligned and make sure your narrative makes sense. Like, start it at the end. Start it after the fact. If you still want to explore those themes. Because for me personally, that would be horrifying for me to try to, like, think about, like, oh, me in another universe, I'm dead. Like, what does yeah. that mean for me? What does that mean for my humanity? What does that mean for everything I care about? And the same thing happens, like, in clone stories. Like, oh, this clone has all of your thoughts and feelings. Like, oh no, that's awful. I don't like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I like to approach, like, kind of doppelganger stories as, like, kind of think about it as like, what are the base traits that make your character, like, your character? And, like, kind of put the, like, conceptualize those, and then like kind of think about what it would be like if your character had been found in different circumstances a different kind of life, like what kinds of like what of their kind of base traits would they retain, and how would those manifest in that completely different environment? And so like it does mean that like your doppelganger has like a different personality, they have different wants and experiences, but also like fundamentally like there should be a way to recognize it as the same kind of person, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm enamored of the idea of being replaced by the doppelganger in these stories. And having the character suddenly change in some significant way. And the standard, I think, that people would gravitate to the most would be like, oh, you get replaced by the evil version of you, like the version that's had a harder life and had difficulty and wants to take you out and live in your life. And, you know, somehow they feel they deserve that and everything. But I also really want to see a story where, like, Jess, for example, you're playing a character and you're a certain type of character, and you know, like you're a generally a good person. You're out, you know, doing good things, and this is an RPG, right? Where you say you're out to do these lovely things, but you also have this kind of snarky, cynical side. And then I, as the GM, take you aside during in between sessions and say, "Okay, you all just time traveled and you've been separated, so your character." And you trust me, and we're going to go along with this because everybody knows there's a time travel story, and this could happen, right? We've all talked about this, and I'm going to be like, Jess, your character has been replaced by another version of you, and you are all of these things, you know, that you were, and this will be temporary. We'll deal with, but you're not snarky and cynical. You're actually kind of upbeat, like you're happy about things, and like, and let's see how the other players react to that and how long it takes them to figure out that like this isn't just Jess the player having a good day and being happy to be gaming, that this is Jess actually playing their character differently because it's somebody else.
There's a great version kind of like that in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, where one of the characters becomes evil essentially, but they time travel their way out of that. It's very good. I really like it. It's also very silly. I don't think your time travel has to make sense. It's fine. I will still enjoy it.
They time travel their way out of a number of problems that they run into in that show. It's a lot of fun.
They time travel their way into a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, if you time travel your way into a problem, you kind of have to time travel your way out of it too, because there isn't another way to do it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. That's also part of the reason why it's horrifying to me. Like, oh, I married one version of this person, and then this other, am I married to this other doppelganger too? I don't know. This is so confusing and so difficult. Oh, that would be a great one too. Like have two of them at once, and you have someone who's in love with them, and they're also both in love with you. And now you have this weird love triangle. I might've just cut out a little bit. I know that I did. I was just talking about love triangles and time travel. I think that love triangle. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Time travel, love triangle. Yeah,
that's my new three-player game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I was playing a character, and I mean, he slept with his doppelganger, so that's a thing you can do too. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Time travel, love triangle. That's a hard one to say.
It is.
But it would be a fun game.
Yeah. I just think that more characters could, like, encounter their doppelgangers and befriend them, and that, you know, very conveniently would resolve a paradox. If you sleep with them.
You're not wrong.
No, that's a great take on the whole doppelganger thing. You team up with the doppelgangers.
Yeah.
Like, we got two timelines where you've got these two sets of characters that are mostly, like, trying to do the right thing, and they just had some different, you know, a handful of different experiences and things that have happened. They've shaped them a little differently, and now we can all team up. It's, you know, it's the Spider-Man...
Far
From Home, like
in Loki, they
fall like Loki and Sylvie, or
all the Lokis,
and then you could do the whole thing. You finally befriended your doppelganger, and now the time cops are after you. Now you can introduce all sorts of other things, or the god of time is mad at you for messing up, or
you weren't supposed to meet.
I have played a couple Pathfinder games that involve some sort of time travel, and they have something in their lore. I don't forget what they call it. It's like time anchors. Like, these are things that have to happen within the flow of time. But as long as, like, that's the thing that will not change. I think that can be a really good tool for a GM too. Like, you need this thing to happen, and it doesn't matter what else they do, but you can always make this one event happen. And you can mess around with that too. Maybe they break the anchor or whatever ends up happening, mm-hmm. but that can help you not have to worry about so many of the other branching things. Because in the end, you cannot possibly expect yourself as a GM to be an entire physics engine. That you are not a god, as much as you would love to be as a GM sometimes. You are not able to like completely conceptualize this world, and your players have to give you a little grace too in that. And you have to give your players a little grace too. You can't completely I think that it's very tempting to railroad your players when you're doing a time travel game, and you have to resist that urge too.
Well, I think it's useful to have those anchors and certain things that will, so that you will not fundamentally change many truths about the setting, because that's going to force the players to have to learn a whole new, I mean, they're going to be constantly on their heels having to relearn the setting.
Yeah.
Which is, sounds like fun, could be fun, and it's probably fun for about three sessions, and then it starts to get really irritating and kind of bog you down, and now you don't know what you can count on. And so so if you have those things in place, I've heard it referred to as if all of time is a stream, you can there are rocks that are in the middle of the stream somewhere, and they will cause water to divert in some direction or another, and you can never move those rocks. They are just part of the stream. And then there are other rocks that you can throw into the stream, and they will cause ripples of different sizes that will cause mm-hmm. different things to happen. Mm-hmm. Some ripples will just be little tiny ripples that'll just affect a small area. Some might be a larger ripple that does something more significant, but there's always some of those things. Like, you know, if you're playing a fantasy game where there was a God's War, or like going back and changing the results of the God's War will fundamentally change so much about the setting of the game. And I don't know if that you want to necessarily go down that road unless you're really up for the task and you're sure your players are as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about designing? I know we've talked about, we've danced around it. If I want to design a game that significantly uses time travel, what should I be doing? Like, what's step number one?
I mean, I think determining the kind of story that you want to tell with it is, would be step number one. To figure out, what the aim of the game is, I guess. Because, you know, like, we've mentioned a lot of things about, like, you know, in a lot of settings, there's time cops who are invested in keeping the timeline a certain way. And, like, you know, you could be working with or against them, having a kind of time, like, if you're going to build a universe in which, like, time travel exists, it kind of does make sense that there would be some form of governing body for it, because if everyone was just kind of time traveling all over the place, your universe just would implode very quickly. But essentially, deciding, like, what kind of story you want to tell about it, and by that, I mean, you can travel to the past. It could be about preventing like catastrophe or discovering something lost from the present. We mentioned predestination, like that's a different kind of story to tell. There's also future knowledge and alternate timelines, and the future being subject to change, and that's also a story you could explore. Like, and we've talked about like the kind of causality, like time loop situation. I feel like kind of picking one of those and being like, okay, this is the kind of story, like this is the journey that like I want someone playing this to go on, and then like going from there to figure out like what kinds of mechanics you could have to recreate that kind of experience would be good. Because otherwise, if I just kind of sit down and I'm like, I want to write a story about time travel, I'm like, okay, but what though? Like, yeah.
Yeah, and then being very explicit too within your game.
Definitely. And so, like, I mean, for example, if you want to tell like a kind of time loop story, then like the idea is mechanically you should give the player a way to like, you know, experience the time loop, and then like every time they do it, they learn a new thing about the situation that will like, you know, let them solve the problem, that kind of situation. And so from there you could be like, okay, so maybe my game will have a mechanic about like discovering information or revealing, or like, you know, you add a detail to the scene, something like that. So I think that like just fundamentally like nailing down what kind of time travel story you want to tell is really important. Yeah.
And it also helps you figure out what the other mechanics that you're going to add into your game will be, because if you are doing a game where there is like there's one solid timeline that should not deviate, or it all like kind of gravitates, like you can write mechanics in there that allow you to do that. If it is a time loop game, like you said, I love the idea of having a time loop game where on every loop you are learning one thing, and that could be something very easy to write. It's definitely a much more a time loop game is a much more constrained kind of one shot idea. It's not something you can necessarily play infinite times. I think having those mechanics to kind of get you out of there eventually.
And I think establishing like the kinds of risks that there are in the story, and like kind of mapping those to like what kinds of resources that you would have. So like if you want to talk about like time as a resource, and like, you know, you can only do time travel for a certain amount, for like to a certain extent, or that you need to replenish it, then, you know, like maybe a kind of like token tracking or HP system might make sense. If you want time travel to be very risky, then like, you know, you could have dice like rolling to represent that. A lot of the, like, I've seen some time travel games that use a deck of cards to be, like, prompts. That's kind of popular, too. And so, like, if you're interested in, like, making it, like, time travel, but, like, world-building aspect, and then, like, you giving yourself, like, that kind of narrative control, you can do that. So kind of trying to pair up those ideas with the kinds of mechanics that you could use to represent them is probably, like, the next step.
I could even imagine a Dread-style game where the tumbling blocks represent the timeline, and every time you do a time travel action,
you have to pull a brick.
And once it collapses. Oh my gosh, you've just reverted us back to singularity. Look what you've done.
maybe
when the time loop restarts.
It's when the god of time or whoever, it's like when you get punished. You can push it for a certain amount of time, and then something bad.
I think maybe with that, like, you'd need a kind of like additional mechanic of like, maybe you keep track of a score, like for certain actions that you take. And so like, depending on like what your score is when the tower falls, like that determines the outcome. So like, you know, maybe you did manage to save the timeline. Maybe you did manage to do this, but with consequences. Maybe you did just die to the god of time. Who knows? But that, you know, that could be an option as well. Like,
I think that there's all sorts of fun ways you could do it, and you could even do it with like divination cards too, because I mean, isn't divination a sort of time travel where you're trying to get knowledge from the future or from something that knows about the future? I think that would be a great way to represent that, especially if you're playing with the idea of fate and free will, to use some of the tools that we have as humans that experiment with fate and free will. I think that there's a lot of really cool metaphorical ways you could go with the main mechanic of your game. What if, though, I was making a game and time travel wasn't the main thing, but there is, like, maybe there is a time travel power because it's a superhero game. It's not the main thing. I don't want it to take a huge chunk of the book. Like, what are my moves then?
You could maybe make it like a kind of player focused option. Okay, so like Dungeons and Dragons actually does have a Chronogy Wizard subclass. It's from the Critical Role setting, but it's an option that you can play. And so like, it's limited in the sense that, like, you know, you can kind of cause a ripple in time and like make someone else re-roll a thing, or you can send someone to, like, you know, 6 seconds in the future or whatever. But like, it's, you know, you can't do like anything that would be game breaking with the mechanics of that class. But I think that if you offer it as like a kind of player option, and then someone wants to take it further, then they can. So like, if you were, you know, you could like make a playbook that was like, okay, so your whole thing is, you know, you have a relationship to time, and to an extent you can manipulate it. Like, depending on the nature of the game, you can give players access to those kinds of mechanics, and then let them kind of take the fiction in whatever direction that they're comfortable with. So like, you know, if you could end up with a character who's like, I actually am interested in going between timelines and, you know, doing all of this stuff, or maybe you're interested in a character who's just like, well, I'm just here to like help save my friends' lives, and if all I can do is just like, you know, go back and forth 6 seconds, then sure, like, that's fine. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be like a central focus, but it's an option. Like,
yeah. Craig, with your game, what kinds of stuff did you do when you were planning it out?
With the little two-player game?
Yeah.
It was, well, you know, it was the thing I was trying to do on was replicate the show. And so, like, the time travel, the different period is just a setting sort of thing. It's the backdrop that your story is set in. One of the things that you can think about that I found myself thinking about when I was preparing for today was, If you're dealing with, you know, a fantasy world or something, you may not have as much to work with. But if you're working on like real world Earth, like if the characters are from today, or close to today, and they're going to be going back in time, you can find yourself thinking about, okay, it, you know, the things that they're doing may not be like world altering. They're not going to be, you know, stopping Kennedy from being assassinated or anything, but they're going to be going back and making some changes to things and altering some this and that, helping, you know, doing something to somebody's life, or fixing something that, you know, like in Quantum Leap, fixing something that, that went wrong and trying to make it go right, is to pay attention to the history that you're dealing with. If you have a group of characters who are diverse, going back to World War II era California with a Japanese American character presents unique challenges for the story being told. If you want to have that be, you know, have the history of how the United States treated Eastern Asian and Japanese people in particular during that era, like, if that's the game, if that's what the game's going to be about, and that's like saying what Sebastian said, if, you know, deciding what the story is going to be about, it's going to be about interacting with the history of the time and understanding that there's some really terrible stuff, and there's some situations that certain characters are going to be in that are not going to be great, or even worse than today. then you've got that to use as kind of a backdrop and something to play with. One of the things that, you know, to kind of go back to Jess's question, that the thing that I thought about quite a bit was the idea of your things, is that, you know, one of the conceits of Quantum Leap is that Sam would go back and they didn't know exactly what needed to be changed. Like, Al would have an idea because Ziggy, the supercomputer, was trying to figure out what it was, and Al and Sam wouldn't leap to the next thing until they figured out and fixed the thing. Right. So they would fix a thing. They would do a thing that they thought they needed to do. And then they would discover that was not the thing that needed to happen. There's something else. And they would go on, and there would be it would be like, it wasn't a loop, but it was a series of similar challenges where they would see the timeline progress, and eventually make their way to the thing that actually made a difference in some way. And in my game, it's built in such a way that the GM who's playing the observer, who's kind of along for the ride and helping to guide the time traveler, is keeping track of a track of points that are randomly generated based on every time that the character makes a major, like makes a trait check to do like some major change. So the GM doesn't know when they're going to hit the threshold that tells you, like, at 30 points, this is the point where you did the thing that needed to be changed. The GM doesn't know what that's going to be. The GM doesn't actually plan for what the thing is going to be.
Mm.
They discover it together, because on the show, that's what happened, was Al and Sam discovered what actually needed to be changed when it was done correctly, when they finally got to that thing. So that can be something that a GM can be doing in a game, and you can design into your game too, is that you don't necessarily have to plan for what the end point is going to be. Like, they're trying to improve a person from the past's life, or they're trying to set a particular event in motion. You don't necessarily know what exactly the thing is going to be that will cause that to happen. So you can decide, you know, either mechanically, like in my game, or you can decide in the moment. Timeless, the TV show Timeless, did that really well, where it was a thing where, like, the history got changed, and a person who gave a particular speech that changed a politician's viewpoint on something was assassinated before they could give that speech. Mm. But the characters went about, like, trying to deal with the situation and deal with these other characters, and eventually inspired another character from the past to give that speech that ultimately changed the politician's.
That's kind of like your recommendation, like your advice of they don't go to the cool spooky castle that you have set up. Well, put the stuff from the cool spooky castle, the place that they end up in anyway. You can play around, like, your players don't ever have to know, like, what necessarily they should even be doing. You can kind of let them explore that space and stick with the theme. And I also like that it kind of symbolizes that, okay, well, if you are playing in a world of time travel, how do you know what's supposed to happen? How do you know what's right if you have a correct timeline? How do you know someone else hasn't messed with it, or you from the future hasn't messed with it, or whatever it ends up being? And I think that that could, I don't know, it kind of seems to me it would give me a little bit more wiggle room as a GM to actually make up a story instead of have to follow an adventure path, for example, which I usually don't like to follow an adventure path. I usually like to have a couple, like a couple plot points that I beat mm-hmm. that I might hit, and then like improv the rest of it with my players. That's typically how I prefer to play.
And it creates this interesting situation for the characters, for the players, when they're trying to figure out what needs to be done. Like the GM is like, we talk about this all the time. Like the players come up with an idea that's so much better than what the GM had planned for.
Yeah, true.
Like, oh, well, like we're going to make that.
Oh, this happens constantly.
Because it'll get us to a great story. It may get us to exactly where I wanted to go in a different way, or it may get us to a better place. And it's going to give the player who came up with the idea a win moment of like, woohoo, I figured this out. And so you can kind of just make that change in the middle of it all. And I've done that in games where that weren't about time travel, and you can certainly do it in time travel stories where you just decide halfway through the game, you're like, no, I'm going to kill that character. I think it's much more interesting if I kill that character. And, you know, in this case, it's the character that needs to give the speech to sway the politician. And then it becomes like, well, does one of the characters step up to give that speech? Do they convince some other NPC that's part of this movement or whatever to step up and do it? There's a lot of different ways that can go. And that also sparks kind of in the players, and the players can portray it in their characters as like a certain amount of hubris that can be like, I can come back here and I can screw this up and something can go off the rails. But I've got all this knowledge and all this skill, and I've got this time travel machine, so I can fix it. And that makes me something special. And how does that play into the characters? And at what point does the one character who's always a little morally ambiguous decide, I'm just going to kind of do some things for myself now? And how do the other characters react to that?
That's when you have the doppelganger from the other universe who is power obsessed to come in and give a good foil to the characters that are exploring that option. Just from a literary point of view.
This is where you will go. Yeah. This is where you will end up if you continue down this path.
Ghosts of future. The ghost of Christmas future.
There. Yeah.
Sebastian, do you have any final thoughts on time travel? Anything we didn't cover that you really wanted to get out?
Honestly, not necessarily. I guess if people are looking for advice on telling time travel stories, I just let me think. My friend Tomas Jimenez Rioja has written a really good series over on Tribality, actually, about how to do time travel in RPGs specifically. So I'd recommend everyone check that out. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. Thank you for the recommendation. I will definitely check that out now. Like I said at the beginning, I love time travel. I think it's so fun to think about. And I love that there's like all sorts of different models that you can go off of with your time travel game, and so many good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think just hard. Yeah, it's difficult, but also just like once you know what kind of story you want to tell, then everything you want, like, you know, there's ways to make it work, and it doesn't have to be all like scientifically accurate, because honestly, if someone asked me to be like, hey, can you explain like, you know, the science of time travel? And I'm like, I don't know, like I'm not using science, I'm using magic. So, yeah.
I didn't write Arrival.
Yeah, but
I don't have that depth of knowledge.
Yeah, but honestly, like, definitely check out the Sciences Division supplement from Modiphius for Star Trek. Super, super fun. Like that has some good practical guidance in it.
Absolutely.
And you don't necessarily have to like know anything about Star Trek to read it. Like you can just kind of like look at the time travel section and like kind of plunder it. To be honest, it's a really good supplement.
Sebastian, thank you for coming back on and talking to us
about time travel. Yeah, thank you for having me. Always, honestly, time travel is so fun. Like,
where and when can we go to find stuff about you and the stuff that you write and create?
So I am online on Twitter and Blue Sky as at Sebastian UA, so SebastianYue, all one word. And my website is sebastianua.ca/ttrpgs, .ca because I'm based in Canada. So please check me out there. Also, if you know, I love writing about time travel and time travel stories, and like I'm available for like, you know, writing games about time travel or that include time travel. Like, would love to do more of that stuff.
Excellent. You can find me on Twitter at Jaska. I'm on Blue Sky at Jaska too, but I'm really not doing too much over there. Or better place to find me would be on itch at wannabegames.itch.io or on DriveThruRPG or at wannabegames.com.
And my website is Nerdburger Games. I am at Nerdburger Craig on all the various social medias that use that kind of nomenclature. You can find the games at drivethroughrpg.com. I'm going to be at Gen Con in booth 162, as it turns out, just down the road in aisle one from the Indie Game Developer Network, where Jess will be at least part of the time. So yeah, come by and say hi.
Gosh, Gen Con seems so far away, yet so close. Thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs, and thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time, or last time. Bye.
Bye.